I just want to welcome everyone to the Spring Awakening, a speaker discussion and interactive workshop focusing on steps 6, 7, 8, and 9. My name is Lona. I am a compulsive overeater and food addict, and I will be your leader or monitor for the first half of our program today. For this workshop, I would like to open with the set-aside prayer, a set-aside prayer. Okay. God, please let me set aside everything I think I know about myself, the steps, my recovery, and you, that I may have an open mind and a new experience with myself, the steps, my recovery, and especially you. Starting off, we will be presenting two speakers who will share on steps 6 and 7, and then 8 and 9. Following each of their shares, we will post two questions to write on, followed by breakout rooms for discussion, and that following that by sharing to the group. There will be a 5-minute break between speakers. We will end the first part with the 7-step prayer. The second part of our program will follow suit with our speaker number 2, questions, breakout rooms, and sharing. We will end the second half approximately at 3:50 and with the promises. If you wish to write, which I suggest you be prepared to have a pen and paper handy. If you wish to speak at the times allotted for sharing, please use the raise hand button, either in the participants or the reaction sections, and click on your name. So here we go. Step 6. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, spiritual principle, willingness. Step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, spiritual principle, humility. So I'd like to introduce our speaker, Michelle, who is from Arkansas and joining us today. And she will speak on these two steps. Okay, Michelle.
Hi, Lana. Hello, everybody. I am Michelle. I am a compulsive overeater. I am in Little Rock, Arkansas, and it's a beautiful spring day today. So spring awakening is very apropos for what we've got going on here today. And I've been in program since 2008. My current abstinence date is Valentine's Day of 2014. And I've been relieved of 130 pounds and living one day at a time in harmony with my higher power is what my recovery looks like. I have 2 sponsees. I have a sponsor. I work the steps every single day to the best of my ability, and very grateful to be here today. I also am your Region 8 treasurer. So if ever you have questions about what the region can do to help support your inner group or your recovery meeting, I'm a great resource for that and can hook you up with what the region has available. So when I came into program, I was really living those D words, demoralized, depressed, despondent. I had similar experiences to other people that I've heard in program where, you know, tried all of the different diets multiple times, did the weigh and pay kinds of programs. I was under a doctor's medical care and, you know, did those really horrible pills that, you know, didn't let your digestive system work correctly. And then I also was in the therapy route. And it was that route that actually got me into the doors of Overeaters Anonymous. My therapist had a former patient who joined Overeaters Anonymous got recovery and said that she needed to share her information with any patient she thought would be appropriately fit for that. And so I wound up going to Overeaters Anonymous through a really lovely therapist who got me there. Physically, I was in a place where I was freaking out, honestly, that I couldn't control my eating. I really, you know, was consumed by food as I was consuming food. I have vivid flashbacks of, you know, just crying while I'm eating because I didn't want to eat, but I couldn't stop eating. It was this horrible place to be. Emotionally, I was a people-pleasing perfectionist. I wanted everybody to like me. I would literally change my personality and my belief structure depending upon what group I was with, because I really wanted them to like me. That was so very important. It got to the point where I really didn't have an identity of my very own that I could honor. And that was also really disheartening. Never satisfied, ever. There was more that I could do. There was less that I could do. There was something different I could do. And that whole people-pleasing and perfectionism and never being satisfied is the crux of really why I would eat to distract or to numb, escape, those kinds of emotions. Spiritually, I was really in a hole. There was this hole in me that I wasn't able ever to fill with food. I kept trying to, but it never really was, you know, appropriate for this spiritual hole that I was in. I was worshiping this story about myself. I was worshiping this story that, you know, I was intelligent and I should be able to figure this out. I was worshiping this story about myself that, you know, I'm a problem solver. There's a problem in front of me. I'm going to work on finding that solution. And it always just seemed so tantalizingly out of reach. This next thing maybe is the thing that will work. I was worshiping a story about myself that the busier I was, the more important I was. Spiritually, I was too smart for my own good. Is really where I was. You know, I really, really believed in that lie that society will try to reflect on, where I can do anything if I just tried hard enough. And man, did I try hard enough trying to control myself and my food. And of course, that was not my answer. That was not the answer. Where I ran out of ideas is where my recovery began. I was ready when I came into the doors of OA. When I came in, I got a sponsor right away, and I did the steps to the best of my ability at that time. And I was relieved of some weight. I did that 301 program, 3 meals, no snacks, 1 day at a time. That was very, very effective for me. It really cleared my head. You know, what was really important for me was to find something that I could do consistently every single day and be successful with. You know, with my intelligence and my problem-solving brain and my creativity, I would want to try to do too much until I recognize that that's not in my best interest. You know, when I think about program, we talk about simple steps. And so what are the first principles? What can I do every single day that gets the food out of this equation so that I can really spend the time with my higher power working towards recovery? Now, my food plan is really, an important tool that I use, but that's not my recovery. Abstinence is, you know, everything that I don't participate in, what I don't eat, the food behaviors I don't participate in. And with my food plan today, it looks very different than what it began with. With my food plan today, I still have 3 balanced meals. I employ the 4 to 6 hour rule, where I have a meal and then I wait 4 hours till my next meal, but no longer than 6 hours till my next meal. And if it has to be, if it is going to be longer than that, well, then I make sure that I have a piece of fruit, either from like the meal before or the meal after, that I'll eat as that metabolism important snack in the middle. You know, planning makes me feel safe. When I was on diets, I was so manipulative. I was playing games as hard as I could with whatever diet this was. And now a food plan is this zone of safety. The less I think about food, the better my life is. And so that being bored with my food is fine. It's food that I enjoy, but it's food that, like, you know, doesn't sparkle. You know, it's food that's just really healthy, mundane, day after day. You know, there's like 3 breakfasts and 2 lunches, and I just rotate, and it's fine. It's fine. You know, any food that I fantasize about is not an appropriate food for me, for sure. So when I got to step 2 and 3, it was a beautiful experience to find a higher power that was really mine. With my science-oriented kind of personal identity, I had done traditional religions and had gotten disillusioned with that and hadn't had a religion for quite a long time. So it was a really interesting journey to go on, to find a power greater than myself that I really felt I could connect with, that was present, that I could trust and have faith in. And I came up with, you know, how I am just so in awe of and respect and recognize the power of the universe. You know, physical law, matter and energy. And what's so cool about this higher power in me is that there is no distinction between the two. I am literally made out of the exact same stuff as everything around me. I am made up of things that came, you know, from the beginning and will be here forever. And I'm just a manifestation here in this moment. And, you know, the better I can connect with my natural world and place in it, that's where my recovery is available to me. So even though my higher power isn't a deity, I did give it a name. I call my higher power Aurora, after the Aurora Borealis. I don't know how familiar you are with the Aurora Borealis or the Aurora Australis. It's atmosphere that's glowing because of charged particles that enter the atmosphere. And this really speaks to me on a couple of levels. First of all, it's this boundary layer between the celestial and the terrestrial, the terrestrial and the celestial, terrestrial, the earth, and celestial, the rest of the universe. I also really like it because I want to envision my higher power sprinkling charged particles on me, and I'm a glowing presence for that. So I am in the universe and the universe is in me. So in abstinence, here's what my abstinence looks like. My physical abstinence, already described, I followed a food plan. I exercise every single day that I possibly can. Oh, I'm a runner. I mean, how did that happen? You know, that was like completely out of left field when this became something that my higher power nudged me into doing. And so, you know, it's just remarkable to me the things that have opened up, these vistas that have opened up that I never would have even contemplated as part of my reality. Another really important piece to my physical recovery is habit and awareness. So habit means that I have built in a cadence to how I operate that I continue to do over and over again, which builds in muscle memory. And so on those days when things are really like off the rails, I can trust that I've built in this rhythm that I can just follow and trust and not have to really work at. Awareness is also really critical. And when I specifically talk about step 6 and 7, you know, I need to really be always paying attention to those subtle but significant character defects that I want to catch early before they become a big deal. So that's where that awareness piece comes in. So my spiritual abstinence is I reach for my higher power now. You will find me breathing in and through my nose and blowing out through my mouth, you know, physically connecting with the space around me. Mindfulness is really a cool, cool thing to participate in. Found moments, like waiting in line at the grocery store, or, you know, waiting in the doctor's office, or I'm an educator, I'm a physics teacher. And so I'll be ready for students 5 minutes before they show up. Well, that's 5 minutes I just hang out with my higher power. Those found moments are precious and beautiful. The other way that I really connect spiritually with my higher power is through writing. I find that that's become a really significant piece of getting it out of here and lifting it off to my higher power. And of course, I no longer worship perfection. Folks, that was huge. Not only do I no longer worship perfection, I recognize it for the destruction that it precipitates. You know what was really helpful for me was when I recognized that there is no like universal checklist of perfection. That doesn't exist. That this idea of perfection is from up here. And anything I come up with is suspect at best and twisted in reality. So that became so clarifying to me how I was really participating in something that was inappropriate and I had to let go. My emotional abstinence, it's like feel or deal. So I can feel my emotions today. They are appropriate. They're not anything to be avoided any longer. I employ personification. So, you know, like, hello, fear. I know you. Come sit here. You're back again, aren't you? Let's just sit here and commune for a little while. Or I deal with those emotions by releasing them to my higher power, circling back to the journaling piece of this. When I really have something that needs to be dealt with, I will write it all out. I will play the tape all the way to the end. I had a sponsee that talked to me about that. It was just beautiful, where you just write out the absolutely worst scenario that I can envision. And then I switch the conversation. I then stop that. And I then start writing about gratitudes that I have, even in that moment. There are always gratitudes to be found. And then I finish it up with a prayer. I write out a prayer to Aurora, and I lift it up. And often there are some action items that are blessed upon me, you know, that I feel nudged. My higher power will nudge me. And I've learned to trust the nudge. And, you know, that's been a really cool feature of my connection with my higher power. So recovery for me is doing what I ought to do because I want to do it. That's what recovery looks like for me. Recovery for me is not needing to be in control. Recovery for me is balance. I seek balance between what I need to do, what I want to do, and to leave space for the unexpected. Recovery for me is that I can respond rather than react. There is power in the pause, folks. You know, just give it a beat. And then finally, recovery is paying attention to gratitudes in all circumstances. So when I did step 6 and 7, and I continue to do step 6 and 7, I really employ that pause. You know, there's a reason that when you're going to start a race, it's get ready, get set, and then go. You know, step 6 for me is the get ready piece of it. And it is a pause. It's a pause between steps 5 and step 7. It literally is this pause, this moment where I can get ready, where I can analyze and reflect. You know, new beginnings are often disguised as painful endings. And, you know, really seeing this character defect and recognizing that it is going to be something that I'm going to release to my higher power offers me a new door that's going to be opened for me that wasn't there before. I went through the steps the first time and, you know, caught all of the big ones. The second time I went through the steps, I went through and riffed on the 7 deadly sins, you know, gluttony, anger, sloth, those kinds of things. And I actually found my journal as I was, you know, contemplating our topic today, where I actually went through and did that. And of course, it's a lot of writing. You know, so I would start with like anger. And I wrote all kinds of stuff about, you know, what I'm angry about now, how I really recognize anger and manifest anger. And I wrote all of that out. And then I wrote a prayer to Aurora. And I thought about, before I wrote that prayer, what is the antithesis? You know, the prayer is the step 7 piece of this. But before I wrote that prayer, I was like, so what is it that would be appropriate instead of anger? So I did, instead of pride, I did humility. Instead of greed, I did generosity. Instead of lust, I did contentment. For anger, I did peace. And so then I wrote this prayer out to Aurora. I said, Aurora, I release my character defect of anger to you. I do not wish to live in blackness any longer. I want to live in acceptance. I will do my best to acknowledge my anger, to release it and live in peace. I give this character defect to you so I can be the best person I can be. So it's the similar language to what step 7 is in the big book. You know, I looked in the big book, of course, and step 6 gets exactly 5 sentences, and step 7 is 4 sentences.
Michelle, mm-hmm. 10 minutes.
Thank you. I really find that interesting that, you know, it is so briefly touched on in the big book, but it is an entire step all unto itself. Again, simple, but not simplistic. And there's this lovely sweet spot where I need to allow myself to pause and reflect and really contemplate what is the opposite. How can I transform or reform this character defect? What would that look like? But I don't want to spend too much time there either. I mean, you know, we only have 5 sentences on step 6. So I need to be moving on to step 7 to actually release these and give them away. Another way that it looks today when I release my character defect and do step 7 is I will sit there and I will mentally polish. You know how you can take even like random, dog poop and you can polish it. You know, they even make jewelry out of it. I mean, go figure, right? So I sit there and I really commune and really think about and really hold that character defect so that it becomes real. And then I recognize the release that needs to happen after that. And the way that it feels to me as I lift it off, I envision taking my clenched fists and just letting them go. And so, you know, I sometimes I actually physically do that in order to make it more of a feature of doing my step rather than just mentally doing it. Willingness and humility being the principles behind these steps are also a real good recognition of what really is fundamentally important in order to be doing it well. And that willingness and that humility is just so woven through that step 7 prayer that it's just beautiful in the way that it's outlined in that prayer. And in that prayer, I am getting out of my own way because I can get in my way really, really easily. And I've learned that that's not in my best interests. And so thank you for letting me be here today. Thank you for letting me share. I really look forward to spending more time in this workshop together. And I pass. Thanks, Lana.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle. The next portion of our workshop is writing. And we have 2 questions, one on each of the steps. Hopefully you have pen and paper or pencil and paper, and you can jot them down because we will allow about 8 minutes for you to write. And then we will break into breakout rooms where you can discuss these questions with those that are in your room. And after the breakout rooms, we will come back to the full group and you can share if you wish. And so that's the format from here on in. So hopefully you are jotting down these questions and can write your answers or at least have the questions in front of you so that you can discuss these questions within your breakout group.
Are we focusing on step 6 first or are we doing both of these?
Both.
Thank you.
basically the same with the second. The format is the same with the second speaker. We'll have the second speaker and then questions and then breakout rooms and then sharing. So I'm going to turn it over to Andrea, who's going to be your leader monitor for the second half.
Okay. Is that right, Lona? All right.
I don't know why.
Hang on a second. Let me get it together here. Okay. All right. So, hi, I'm a compulsive eater. My name is Andrea. I'm always underprepared and surprised by life. I thought I was just timing, but here we go. Tricia is sharing steps 8 and 9. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And that spiritual principle behind the step is self-discipline. And step 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Spiritual principle, love, which I think is fantastic. I never knew that about the love behind step 9. So our second speaker today, who's going to share on steps 8 and 9, we're so blessed with these two excellent speakers, and that we're going to turn it over now to the second presenter, and that is Duke. Take it away, Duke.
My name is Duke. I'm a compulsive overeater. It's very good to be here. Always an honor and a privilege to be of service. Thank you for putting on the workshop today. My apologies. I was at my home group this morning in Massachusetts. I was a resident of Florida for about 5 years, and the Hollywood Solutions meeting was my Sunday morning meeting at 10 a.m., so I know quite a few of the faces here, and I'm forever grateful for the friendship and for the opportunity to speak on Zoom. There's a lot of really good things that have happened in the last couple of years, and one of them is Zoom. I don't actually have to fly to Florida. I can actually get on Zoom and be there. So I'll give you a brief qualification. How much time do I have?
Go
ahead, Lona.
You have 20 to 30 minutes. I can give you a signal at 20 minutes so that you
That would be good. That would be good. And then I can kind of pull it together. So the 24th of April is 34 years in Overeaters Anonymous for me. With varying degrees of success. So what I'm going to do is put a picture up, which that's me on the left. Not in 1988 when I came in, but around 2000, because I had relapsed with my food plan. I had gotten up to about 450 pounds, topped out at about 500. And the picture on the right is, that's like within the last couple of weeks. And that's me. And so why do I show that? Because, you know, I came into Overeaters Anonymous because I wanted to lose weight. I wasn't interested in, you know, I didn't know that it was a spiritual program that had practical application to relieve my eating disorder. Didn't think I had an eating disorder. I thought I had a problem with weight. Everybody else in the world was the problem. You know, you did this and you did that. And I was kind of a perpetual victim. So I came in 1988 and I stayed. And, you know, just by following, as somebody mentioned earlier, 3 meals a day, they called it the 301 club, nothing in between but life and one day at a time, you know, the weight started to fall off. And I remember my sponsor said to me that if I followed the food plan and did the work, that the weight would start to come off naturally as a byproduct of actually doing the step work. And that was true for the most part. I had a lot of physical recovery real quickly. And, you know, kind of get on the speaker circuit. But I hit the wall around 7 years in, then about 11 years in, and started struggling. And what I know now is that I never effectively get down to causes and conditions. I never did a thorough fourth step. And, my fourth step lacked depth and weight. And so my sponsor, who I've had since 1993, God bless her, she sent me to meetings in Massachusetts, which were big book step study meetings, which you can't speak at the meeting unless you've been through the workout of the big book the way that the group has done it with a sponsor from the group. And I thought, my gosh, this is like violating every tradition. And I went home and I called her, and it was like whale screech coming out of the phone. I said, I don't like that. You know, I can't talk at that meeting. And what she said to me was, all you do is talk about the problem. Maybe it's time for you to listen. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And she hung up, and I was like, did she just say that to me? And the next day I talked to her, and she's like, listen, you're 500 pounds. You've got severe sleep apnea. They told you you're not a candidate for bypass surgery. You've tried liquid diets with Metafast. You've done the Weight Watchers. You've done like all these different kinds of things. And she's like, you know, you've had four small strokes. You know, you just like, you know, what's your option? You know? And so I went back begrudgingly. And what I started to hear was a piece. I heard purpose. I heard people actually talk about the solution. They gave clear-cut directions out of the big book. And what my sponsor said to me is that smarter people than me wrote the steps, and they're already written in black and white. And so this particular group follows that format. So how do I actually get to steps 8 and 9? What I can tell you is I never read the doctor's opinion in the first 11 years. You know, as a college student, I never read the preface. You give me the syllabus, you tell me what chapters I got to read. And, so I completely missed the doctor's opinion. And so, you know, the old timers in OA used to say to me, alcoholics drink their sugar, we eat our sugar, sugar is sugar. And so I didn't really understand what that meant. And they said flour turns into sugar kind of thing. And I thought, like, what are they, like scientists? Like, what do they know? Like, you know, I was just kind of like, I was a little jaded. And here I am sitting in a meeting, you know, years later, and here's Dr. Silkworth talking about analogy. When I put certain things in my body, it sets up, you know, it triggers me and sets up the allergic response, which creates, you know, the phenomenon of craving. And step one was always broken down into two parts for me, which is the doctor's opinion that I have an allergy, that I have a phenomenon of craving, that I have diminished mental capacity, in that particular regard. And then the second part of step one was the chapter on more about alcoholism, the peculiar mental twist. So it's my thinking that gets me into trouble. Suddenly the thought crosses my mind, as Jim talks about in the big book, that he can, you know, after a period of time, he can put, you know, whiskey in with his milk on a full stomach and he's going to be okay. And that's what happened to me time and time again with the weight loss, that I had, you know, I've been good, or, you know, I can have like the cheat day. You know, I went to the Weight Watchers thing, and they were like, you know, save your points for like, you know, Super Bowl Sunday. It was like basically starve all week so I can binge on Sunday. And it was just kind of like this crazy rationale. What happened in that process, I was actually clinically diagnosed as hypoglycemic, low blood sugar. So that meant I had to eat six meals a day, smaller meals. And that's what I've been following now for years. And that works for me. You know, high protein, low carb, healthy carbs, and healthy fats. And I use a calorie tracker throughout the day that kind of keeps me on track. Because, you know, by every form of self-deception, I try and prove myself, you know, that exception to the rule kind of thing. So, you know, I did all of that. And the meeting this morning was actually on step three. One of my sponsors, AA sponsors, was there that actually did the third step prayer with me. And he said, you know what you're actually doing when you do the third step prayer? And I'm like, a prayer? And he's like, no, you're making a commitment to finish the work and help other people get well. That's the bargain that you're making with God. And he said to me, do you know who God is? And I said, no. And he said, he said, in the last analysis, God can be found. And he said, the last analysis is your fourth step, and that God is actually within you. And when you unclog the channel in steps four through nine, you open up that channel and you get to connect with God. So I believe that God is within me. And that works for me. And so, you know, after the third step prayer, I started writing, and I had to write a list of people that I was resentful towards. And I had never done it this way before. It was laid out for me in three parts, which it is in the big book. And some of it doesn't have a lot of description. But working with somebody one-on-one, they gave me the description of how to actually do it. So I did a timeline of like places I lived, kind of memory jogger. And then I came up with my list of names. So like, even if somebody looked at you like cockeyed, like, or like stole your lunch or whatever it was from 40 years ago, put them on the list. And so everybody I was resentful towards, they also said that if, you know, I had some abuse issues growing up, some historic despair, they said they go on the resentment list. You were not at an age of reason or consent. You were a minor, you were young. And so those do not go on the, you know, the sex inventory. So it was broken down into three parts. My resentments, which included the turnarounds, which I had never done before. So I was resentful at, as it lays out in the big book, who I was resentful at, what does it affect my self-esteem, my pride, my ambitions, my personal relationship, my security, my sex relations. And then I had to look at what my part was. Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I self-seeking? And where was I afraid? And that was the part that really started to create that shift for me. So my brain needed to be cleared, because it says a man's brain needs to be cleared before this can be of maximum benefit. And what I usually tell people is, I don't take food plans. I don't prescribe a food plan. Work with a dietitian, do your thing, get your food in order, you know, apply it with the doctor's opinion and the allergy, what your trigger foods are, what works, you know, what works, what doesn't work for you, you know. And, you know, what I found is over 34 years, I have to constantly press the reset button. Some foods are allowed in, then they go back out, you know, that kind of thing. I can have certain things when I go out to eat, but I can't have them in the house. And that pretty much simplifies that. So somebody's brain needs to be cleared. Then I start the writing, and my sponsor met with me each week and said, I want you to read pages 60 to 64 and 84 to 88 every day before you write. I said, that's a lot of reading. And said, if you don't want to do it, I can't work with you. And I said, well, why do I need to read it? And they said, 60 to 64 is going up to step three. And that's your will, the actor trying to run the show. 84 to 88 is how you're going to be conducting your life going forward. And hopefully your will start to align with God's will at some point. And that, much like the prayers of your childhood, it may be rote or mechanical, but it'll take on more meaning later. And my sponsor also said that the steps were to do now and understand later, they'll take on more meaning when you start working with other people and bringing them through the steps. And again, they're already written in black and white. I don't need to figure it out. So I wrote my resentments out. I had about 500 of them. They told me to save my family until the end. Because I would have practice with writing with the other ones. And then, of course, do the turnarounds. And then I had to do the sex inventory and then the sexual ideal. And then I also had to do my fear inventory. So I went into step five. Took me a while. I got step five done. I would meet my sponsor on Saturdays. He had about an hour free. And I would sit and read with him and go through it. You know, the resentments, the turnarounds, you know, got through all of that. Then we went on to the sex inventory, then the sexual ideal. Then we went through the fear inventory and, you know, moved on to six and seven, did the prayer, spent my hour with God. And then he said, now we start on, you know, eight and nine. And I said, you know, I was still kind of a little, and he said, we go back to that list of your turnarounds. Where were you selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? And that's, I want you to get a highlighter out, and that's where you're going to owe your amends. You don't go out and, you know, waylay somebody in Target that you run into or Walmart and say, hey, you know, like, I didn't tell you, like, I stole money from you or I was unfaithful with your partner. He's like, highlight them. We're going to go over them. And it literally was succinct, because what I'm doing is I'm making an amends. Some people, it was safer for me not to go to them. In terms of, I don't even know how I can explain it. My side of the street was clean, but there were a couple of dicey kinds of things. They were pretty abusive and they were dangerous people. So it was important for me not to kind of go there. But basically what I did is I made the list and then we wrote out what I was going to do and what I was going to say with each person that I went and made an amends. So for example, regarding food, I had worked at an institution where I had the keys. And so I had access to food. So I would actually go in and like steal stuff off the cart and didn't replace it. You know, I basically took the food, you know, I felt entitled like it was mine. And what I did is I had made an appointment with the facility and my sponsor actually had me go shopping. And I calculated what it is I had stolen over time in food. and I literally went shopping and I filled two huge carts at Target with stuff. And I made an appointment and I went in and I said, you know, I used to work here and I stole food, you know, that wasn't mine. And I'm here to correct that. And so I said, you know, I want to, and she's like, oh my God, she's like, this is like awesome. Like we need stuff, you know, I don't know where my camera is, but she said, we need stuff. And you know, this timing is perfect. And she said, are you in a recovery program? And I said, I am. And she said to me, my husband's in NA. And she said, you know, this is really awesome. Thank you. You know, I kind of figured you were in a recovery. Nobody was there that I had worked with anymore. This is, you know, probably 20 years later. And I walked out of there and I knew that feeling of being able to look the world in the eye. My fear started to fall from me. And I just felt right with God. I was starting to clear things up, you know, and because of the greed and the gluttony with the food, one of the things I used to do in South Florida all the time is, you know, every intersection you pull up to on 95, like Broward Boulevard, Copens, it doesn't matter where you go, Hollywood Boulevard, there's somebody there that's panhandling. And what I would offer them is a bottle of water and a Quest bar. You know, and that was basically my living amends for the amends that I couldn't actually, you know, people who had either died or whatever. It was a way for me to kind of like, you know, settle the score. And so what I want to do is I actually left my big book in the truck by mistake when I was coming in because I've been out doing stuff today. And I don't know where I am with time.
You still have 6 minutes left before the 20. So you have like
15 minutes.
15 yeah. minutes.
Okay, cool. All right. So, you know, I'm big book oriented, right? So I'm going to go off my iPad here. Like it highlights things, it looks up words, it looks up the whole thing because that's the process that I used. I didn't actually use OA literature to go through the steps. I used the big book, and the Saturday morning solutions meeting was big book oriented. And that's what my sponsor recommended that I do, because at that point I had already done this work and it was an opportunity for me to be able to hear the solution of what was already written in black and white. So, and here's what it says. Now we need action. We need more action. Without which we find faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. And it says, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. That was step 4, right? Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. You know, I don't say I'm sorry. I don't like, you know, I don't whine. You know, I'm there to actually correct a wrong, a harm that I've done. Because to amend is to change the behavior. The best amends that I can make is to change my behavior and not repeat it again. Because the failed, you know, I'm sorry, and those empty kinds of things just don't work. You know what I mean? It just doesn't do it. So let's see. And it says, you know, we may feel diffident about going to some people on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured, to some people we need not, probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature freely, right? So our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And then it also says it's seldom wise to go to somebody who might be hurting from, you know, what we've done. You know, people are going to be more interested in a demonstration of our goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries, right? So don't tell me who you are, show me who you are. You're going to actually going to be able to change and kind of do that. And then it talks about the question of how to approach a person we don't like. You know, we take the bit in our teeth because it's easier to go to a friend than it is to an enemy. So I had to do some of the hard ones first. And it says, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply tell them we will never get over our drinking or eating until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. If our manner is frank, calm, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. And it goes on to say that a lot of people are receptive. Some people are, some people aren't. And then it goes on to say most alcoholics owe money. dodge our creditors. I had the IRS show up at my house, like, you know, because they all, like, you know, decided I'm going to pay my taxes for like 5 years, and then had this random thought of like, oh, I'll file my taxes. And they were like, where the freak have you been for like the last, you know, like 5 years, you know? And so I ended up getting in a debt management program with them and paid that off over time. You know, when they talk about the most ruthless creditor, I mean, they came to my house and, you know, I sat down with the guy and he's like, can we take your furniture? Like, and I'm like, oh, you want, like, I'll have nothing. But, and I explained to him that I was in a recovery program, that I was newly, you know, sober and abstinent, and, you know, I was irresponsible, and he was pretty cool. I'm sure it wasn't the first time he's heard it. And, you know, I made a financial arrangement with him and I got involved in a debt management program, and I paid my creditors back. You know, my sponsor said to me, it's not, you don't file bankruptcy and wipe this away. You spent it, you're going to pay it back. And I was like, holy crap. Like, and I did, you know. What else do I want to say here? I've got a bunch of stuff highlighted. Before taking such drastic action that might implicate other people, we secure their consent. So if there's other people involved in an amends that I owe, I need their consent. And if they don't consent, then I got to let it go. You know what I mean? And I pray about it. And, you know, I do the next right thing. What else do I want to say? You know, it talks about the guy who got up in church and he, you know, made an amends to the entire parish kind of thing for what he did. I think that's great. If that's warranted. But I'm really, what I've found most beneficial is to go to somebody and, you know, do it one-on-one, you know, and if they want me to go out and, you know, speak in that way, or, you know, if I was bad mouthing people or something like that, I mean, and one of the things that I worked out with my sponsor is, you know, I don't know, pick a name from here, like Lona, right? Like if I bad mouth Lona, I don't go up to her and be like, hey girl, by the way, I talk shit about you. And that's, I'm creating more injury. You know, the thing is I'm changing the behavior. If they don't know that I was talking negative about them or bashing them, I don't do that because I'm inflicting more harm. What I do is I don't do that behavior anymore. That's the change that has to come. So that's the part of the living of it. You know, it goes on to say, chances are we have domestic troubles. We doubt, in the respect that alcoholics are fundamentally different than other people. Drinking complicates sex relations in the home. And then, of course, it talks about the affair. And it says, if they know we were wild in a general way, we kind of leave it at that. If they know specifics, we don't implicate another person. We don't bring that and say, yeah, it was, you know, John Doe, Jane Doe, whoever kind of thing. And we really don't, we have no right to do that. You know, it goes on to say that our design for living is not a one-way street. It, you know, it's as good for the wife as the husband. You know, it does say that in some cases, the utmost frankness is to be demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. You know, and it says, keep always in sight that where you're dealing with the most terrible emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than face to face. So, you know, why do I read this? Because again, these are the instructions that are given in the big book of how to actually do this. You know, it's a spiritual program that has a practical application to relieve it. You know, it says there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we're sorry will not fill the bill. You know, I've got to correct the harm that I've done. You know, it goes on and it talks about the family. It says, so we clean house with the family, asking in meditation each morning that our creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Not everybody's, you know, coming along with us on this journey. Like if we've been living in a chaotic, crazy house, and all of a sudden we're changing, the house may still be chaotic and crazy, you know, and chances are I may have been the one that actually created or kind of fanned the fires on that. Now that I'm getting like, well, I don't need to walk around like I'm a zealot and point at everybody else who's like, you know, you're not doing this and you need a program, like that kind of shit. It doesn't work well. And it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. What are they talking about halfway through? They're talking about halfway through our ninth step amends list. You know, it says, and that's where the promises start to come through. Cause it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. Halfway through what? Halfway through our ninth step list, right? We will not regret the past, right? Step 4. We will not even wish to shut the door on it. We're actually going to be grateful for the experiences because we actually have the spiritual growth. And if we've had the spiritual experience, which is the essential psychic change, which is basically our reaction to life changes. We used to think and act one way around food and life, and our reaction changes. You know, I can give you a quick example. There was a snowstorm. I had stopped by my mom's house at the time, as many years ago. I was in recovery, you know, shoveled her out kind of thing, go out to my car. I'm getting ready to leave and my battery's dead. It's winter in New England, right? I go back in the house and I'm like, oh, my battery's dead. I'm like, I'm going to call AAA. And I said, is there still any more coffee in the kitchen? And she's like, yeah, there's coffee in the kitchen. And I'm like, and I sat down and she said, that's it. I'm like, what? And she's like, I don't know what's going on with these meetings you're going to, but the reaction would have been like, you know, I can't believe I got to spend more money. The world is going to blow up. Nothing good ever happens to me. You know, life sucks. You know, I went into this whole thing. And so people often see the change in us before we see it in ourselves. Right. So she was seeing a change in me, not just physically, but as my sponsor said to me, we change from the inside out as a result of doing the work. So that spiritual experience, which it talks about in the back of the book, and the essential psychic change is really a result of doing this work. So when I was, you know, I just went into Starbucks and I'm standing in line and, you know, I always kind of chuckle because they have the case in front of you that you've got to go buy like all the stuff to get like, you know, my green tea that's unsweetened, right? And I can honestly tell you, it's like looking at my cell phone or like the wall or the door. Like the things used to be like, we're here, we're inside. You know, I couldn't have shit in the house. Like, you know, the cabinets would be talking in the middle of the night. Do you know what I mean? And it's really been removed. And it's a result of doing this work. Now, does it stay removed? You know, that's where 10, 11, and 12 come in, that I have to, you know, and that's a whole different workshop about, you know, where am I resentful, selfish, dishonest, and afraid, and where do I owe an amends? And I've got to keep doing this. You know, that's why as you start to get to those latter steps, it says continue, continue, continue. It's not a one and done. But if I'm following my food plan, I don't have the desire to eat other stuff, and other people's food isn't my food. What I can say, in regards to some of the amends, there were some people that I really struggled with. And now I know what I had wanted to say about that, where some people who were abusive in my life, you know, what my sponsor said to me was the best thing you can do for them is pray for them and stay out of their way. Because the angry man's prayer in the big book says, perhaps they spiritually sick. Right. So, and that's the best that I can do. And I remember my first sponsor, who actually is friends with the current sponsor that I have. I had her in 1988, and I'm still in touch with her. And what she said to me was that you get sick through your mouth and you're going to get better through your mouth. Speak up. Because as a kid, I got bullied into silence, you know, and my reaction, whatever it was food, you know, and later it kind of became whack-a-mole. I jokingly say I have the disease of more. But that's pretty much like 8 and 9 for me. Like I made the list. I went out, I did it. I did some graveside amends. You know, I wrote letters, I read to people. I went out and researched people that I needed to. Thankfully, my finances were cleared up, you know, from my previous attempts when I did the other fourth step. But again, the only way I got to this level of 8 and 9 was because I sat in the halls. I listened to people who had done this work. They had, you know, a sense of ease, a sense of purpose, clear-cut directions. They had a message that had depth and weight. And they showed me how it was done, you know? And again, it wasn't like, you know, I made an appointment with somebody and if they wanted to hear from me, they would call me back or do what they could do. If they didn't, I moved on. You know, it, as it says, our job is to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. So I may be the only version of the big book that other people ever read. So if I'm at, you know, Marshall's or I'm at Target and there's one cashier or one barista, you know, I don't blurt stuff out in line anymore. Like, you know, more cashiers, you know, like, you know, why, you know, why, you know, like that's old behavior. Like, you know, I text a friend on the phone and I'm like, how's your day going? You know, I open up the big book app and I start reading something. I put a meditation on, you know, I try and do some prayer time. Strike up the conversation with somebody in line. Somebody's got four kids behind me with strollers. I'm like, why don't you go ahead of me? you know, I'm not a demigod. I'm not a saint. I don't do it perfectly all the time. I'm in my loft, right, where I am right now, right? So I'm a little like Om Shanti Om, you know, and of course I get out on the main road and it's like, you know, somebody cuts me off and like the F-bombs, you know, want to start going. And then I have to say to myself, you know, where are you going really? Like in a hurry, and you don't know where they're going. And I can pull myself back today because what I realize is that almost all of it is just fear. You know, losing what I have, not getting what I want, unable to control the situation, not being liked, not being loved. And I can kind of literally cycle through so that I don't have the window down screaming words at people that I need to make amends for, you know, or being inappropriate, like at Marshall's or Starbucks or somewhere like that. So, you know, I'm going to look quickly and see if there's anything here.
You've got 2 minutes.
How many?
3.
Okay, cool. Let's see. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. And that's what I was talking about. We start to move from self to others. You know, that's what this process really allows me. And I have to continue, you know, that's step 10, but our whole attitude and outlook of life will change. Fear of people and of economics insecurity will leave us, and we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And that's basically, you know, steps 8 and 9 for me, is following the process, did a lot of writing. I had 15 subject notebooks. You know, I felt like a monastic scribe. I wrote for about 2 years, and every time I put the pen down, life got very colorful because I was taking my will back. And, you know, as a result of doing the work, you know, because for me, it was a numbers game when I came in. I didn't want to be fat. I'm 6'6", and I'm 240 pounds. And when they do my BMI, I don't qualify as obese. And getting older, I've got some health issues. And they don't say to me, lose 20 pounds, lose 10 pounds. Like I had a doctor's appointment yesterday. Is there anything I need to do? He's like, well, I think you should take, you know, your iron pills with your vitamin C. It'll help absorption. He didn't say to me like, and actually interesting, he said to me, well, sometimes celiac or gluten can be a thing. I said, well, let's just stop. I said, I haven't had anything with gluten in it for like over a decade. He's like, well, that's not affecting your iron absorption, clearly. Like, so, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to not have that, because I had doctors who told me like, if you lose the weight, you wouldn't have this problem, you know? Mm-hmm. So it takes shit out of the equation today. And the last thing I want to say is that I always felt less than everybody else. And when I finished this process, I felt like I fit in, like it was a level playing field. Like I belonged, I'm not better than anybody else, not less than anybody else. I can look the world in the eye and I can be at peace and ease. Not 24/7, that's the job, but that's how I do it. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Duke.
Thank you.
Great, very thorough. Should I continue, Lona, or?
Sure, Tricia, we're gonna put up the.
Okay, so yeah. Like the last on step 6 and 7, now Tricia is sharing step 8, the step, the principle, and we have two, I'll just read them. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Spiritual principle is self-discipline. So here's the two questions for you to write on and write down. What are the benefits of step 8? What part does forgiveness play in this step? And then on step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. The spiritual principle is love. And then those two questions are, what amends do I still need to make? How do I make amends to myself? How does the principle of love relate to making amends? What will happen now is we'll have some time to write before going into our breakout rooms.
Andrea, we'll have 8 minutes to write.
Okay, so gentlemen, start your engines.
Hi, Lana. My computer kicked me off and I'm back again.
Okay, good. We're at the questions.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
I think we have another 2 minutes to continue writing. It's time now to get into the breakout rooms.
All right, everybody, prepared to move?
Tricia? I don't see where I can join the breakout room. Can I get the invitation again?
Oh, sure.
Thanks.
Oh, no, wait. Can't wait. Now let me do that. Okay. Let me move you. How come you're not on the list there? Okay. I'm going to assign. How do I do this now? Wait. I know how to do this. I haven't done it in a while, but I know how to do this. Give me a second here. Let me think about this. Okay. No, I don't want to do that. No, I want to move you. How do I do this? Wait.
Well, maybe, wait a minute. If I say breakout rooms, I could join one.
Right. Okay. Would you join number, let's see, join number 3.
Okay, got it. Okay. Yeah.
All right.